This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
8:36, Tuesday, the 29th of November, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Keith Kam, Chong Jensen, and I'm Wong Xiaoning. Let's talk about parliamentary reform, because after more than two decades, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim is finally Prime Minister after gaining support from the various coalition parties. This came after election results showed that no party had actually won the simple majority required, which is 112 out of 222 seats in the Dewan Rakyat.
The country has now entered a new political era where no party can claim itself to be dominant or have attained that magical 112 number. So it's requiring parties from across the political divide to form coalitions. And for that to happen, as negotiations, concessions will have to be made for laws to pass. And, you know, basically, what does this mean for his reform agenda?
Yeah, because reform agenda was and is a key priority of the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto. Or will the lack of bipartisanship torpedo the dreams of the party that has its roots in the term reformasi? For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Maha Balakrishnan, parliamentary consultant and researcher. Good morning, Maha. Now, there are many fractured national institutions that require repair and reform, Parliament being one of them, and given that reforms is a key agenda for our 10th Prime Minister, what are the parliamentary reforms that he should prioritise?
Good morning, all. Thank you so much for having me. Well, first, let's talk about the purpose of these reforms. So, number one, parliamentary reforms would boost confidence in the stability of a key institution so that Parliament can run independently and efficiently no matter who wins in an election. So, in other words, the institution has to be prevented from being vulnerable to being captured by whoever is in the ruling coalition of the day. But there's actually a second purpose for parliamentary reforms in this minority or multi-coalition government, and that is to actually monitor and regulate the political bargain between the different groups. So, with this in mind, I think that the top four priorities for Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim should be, first off, and as an immediate confidence booster, to enact a fixed-term Parliament Act. So I think most of your listeners will already be aware by now that a fixed-term Parliament Act fixes the length of a term of a Parliament. It will specify an end date for the Parliament, but at the same time provide for ways in which there could be an early dissolution of Parliament, so long as a certain percentage of MPs approve of it. Now, a fixed-term Parliament Act does not actually need to be a permanent act. It is possible to enact a law just for the length of this 15th Parliament. And either in that law or separately, there should also be rules and procedures set down in writing that allow for motions of confidence and no confidence to be brought in the Dewan Rakyat. Now, I know that there are some people who worry that making it easy to bring votes of no confidence will actually be disruptive and create instability. But we've seen from other countries, other parliaments, that this is actually not the case. Any political bloc will be sure to be very careful before they use the procedure because it could have a lot of blowback against them if they fail. And at the same time, we could also put in fail-safe mechanisms to make sure that the procedure isn't abused, for example, by limiting the number of motions that can be brought in each parliamentary meeting or session, and also by requiring that the motion should first be supported by a certain percentage of MPs and so on before it can be brought to the floor of the House. But whichever model that is used for a fixed-term Parliament Act or for a confidence procedure, what will result from that is actually a reduction in the risk of backdoor governments because they will provide a legal and transparent pathway for parties in a multi-party coalition system.
Yes. Sorry. For this sort of reform to take place, I reckon that he would need to have at least two-thirds majority, and he claims to have that 148 magic number for two-thirds majority. Does that make things easier for his administration?
To a certain extent, it does, but I think we also need to be clear about what elements of these reforms actually require constitutional amendment and what can be achieved simply by, let's say, enacting normal legislation or even making amendments to the standing orders, which won't require a two-thirds majority, which can be achieved by a simple majority. So it's really about breaking down the process and understanding how much of it needs constitutional amendment and how much doesn't. But even with the current two-thirds majority, and I think this is one of the important topics that we wanted to discuss as well today. There is the question of the bigger the majority needed, the more compromises and concessions you may potentially need to strike in order to achieve this.
And Maha, back in 2018, an Institutional Reforms Committee was set up that looked at Independent Police Complaints and Misconduct Commission, the EC and MACC, but the work is half done. Could this work as a template for the Anwar Ibrahim administration?
It could, but I believe that it might be more prudent to actually set up a fresh vehicle to plan the reforms. And I think the main thing the main approach that this new administration should take should actually be to approach this entire endeavor as a business plan. To really lay out a strategy and a timeline. Map out what the intended outputs are, what the milestones are, and also then to work out what are the optimal points and the suboptimal points in this timeline to enact these reforms. I mean, let's take an example of the upcoming state elections, right? So the state elections in certain states have to be held by the middle of next year. So does the lead up to that provide potentially an optimal point to enact a few of these institutional reforms? Yeah. And of course, politics and the economy is linked. So the economic conditions will definitely influence the pace and type of institutional reforms that they could pursue at any given point in time. So it's really about understanding when your coalition will be at its strongest. It's about tracking public sentiment alongside current events. And of course, throughout the process, it is vital for this administration to take control and keep control of the narrative.
Maha, you mentioned four key reforms. I think,
yes.
What else is a priority? Maybe you can run through the top one on your list other than the one you've already mentioned.
So the other two actually relate to Parliament directly. So number three on my list would be to ensure that Parliament becomes an independent service that is outside the control of the executive. And what we're talking about here is to have independent administrative, operational and financial control. So in practical terms, what this would mean is that parliamentary staff shouldn't be appointed or the appointments controlled by the government, that Parliament would also have full control of its budget. And also that there should be really, this is key, a code of ethics for parliamentary staff and for the speaker that includes acting in a non-partisan manner. Then the final recommendation I have is to actually improve the functional capacity of Parliament. And what do I mean by this? Well, let's look at Parliament's key functions. They are lawmaking, conducting oversight over the government, providing budget allocations, and of course, scrutinizing government expenditure. Now, all of these functions are actually stated in our constitution, which is excellent. So the constitution protects Parliament's power. But the problem has been that up until now, the rules of Parliament have not been strengthened to give MPs the procedural powers that they need to actually utilize their constitutional power. Now, what therefore needs to be done moving forward is to make amendments to the rules and procedures to, you know, for example, ensure that we have a fixed system of parliamentary committees that shadow key ministries and key portfolios. And in doing so, to also give them the powers they need to act properly. I think a number of gaps and vulnerabilities in the current rules were revealed during the Azam Baqi debacle. So those gaps need to be corrected. And two other key aspects that can be improved in terms of how Parliament operates. Number one is how bills are passed. So the passing of bills has to become more transparent and inclusive. And we must set down time limits so that bills are not rushed through the House, and also to include a public consultation process, which can be achieved simply by sending major bills to select committees for review. And then finally, our Parliament really needs its own independent office for budget review. So this is a body that is set up and controlled by Parliament and has the power and resources to conduct its own physical and economic evaluation and to provide MPs and senators with its data and analysis.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Maha Balakrishnan, parliamentary consultant and researcher, telling us the priorities of this new government and that, you know, it needs to be done quickly At the same time, although there must be consultation with stakeholders, this is an opportunity that should not go wasted. I think one interesting reform for me is to actually have this fixed term Parliament Act. Specify the end date of Parliament, then it just stops all the political wrangling that we saw in the last few months.
But I think the fundamental of it is that we've veered so far away from the separation of powers that we no longer see the separation of the executive, the legislative, as well as the judiciary. At least this one, with what she's proposing, at least we're going to be seeing some separation between the executive and the legislative as well.
I mean, the Reformasi movement was like 25 years ago, but I remember it so clearly because I was then a fresh graduate. I was a little young, wet around the ears, and me and my few friends, we had some not-so-bright ideas. And we actually drove to Anwar Ibrahim's house the night he got arrested, and he stayed in Bukit Damansara at that point in time. But he wasn't there, of course, but there was so much commotion there. There was so much media there, and there were a lot of supporters shouting, Reformasi, Reformasi, and that was my first exposure to Reformasi.
And now we're living it. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.